Are you with the shits? Because they are. Straight out of the Bronx. It's Heidi and Lexi. And you are now tuned into Ladies Pitch. Here's your host, Heidi Baby. And Lexi, the motherfucking savage.
That was actually pretty good. Welcome, guys, to another episode of the Ladies Pitch Podcast. What's going on? This is your favorite mommy, Heidi Baby. And tonight I have with me a special guest, a very dear friend of mine, my boo, my bae. Boo, you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, guys. It's Dory.
Hi, Dory.
Hi.
Dory. Dory is an alias, and we're going to dig deep a little into why we nicknamed you Dory. Because I'm pretty sure someone at work nicknamed you that, right?
I think it was Carl.
Okay.
I think.
What's going on, boo? How are you?
I'm okay. I'm just trying to get my life together, you know, like most people.
Right. I was going to say, aren't we all? Any day now, my life will be together. I've been waiting 38 years for this moment.
Same, like, shit.
When does it stop, right? When does it end?
Right. Like, what the heck? Mm-hmm. We need, yeah. I don't know. You know what we need? We need sugar daddies. We're like, that don't want sugar. Give us all their money.
I'm okay with a sugar daddy that doesn't want sugar, because I don't want to give my sugar away. My sugar is locked and just put away for now. So I get my life a little bit more together, and then my sugar will be spread. Not spreaded, but, you know, we'll spread to the...
I know, like, hey, yo.
Don't get the wrong idea, guys. Don't start DMing me down, like, yo, I want some of that sugar you're spreading. But,
oh, my God, your word.
Yeah. I'm good. I'm doing okay. No, I'll say that. We're going to get straight into it. But before we do, guys, remember to like, subscribe, share, review the podcast on all streaming platforms. You can find Ladies Pitch on Instagram at Ladies Pitch and on Twitter, Pitch718. So you can find a podcast. You will find the Ladies Pitch podcast there. You already know. Dory, this is not your first. Is this your first time on Ladies Pitch? No. You were on our 100th episode.
Yeah.
Right?
Was on our 100th episode. I've been on a couple, I think.
On two, I believe. There was one where you were talking about jail sex, post-jail sex.
Yes.
And then you was on our 100th episode. But I mean, like a one-on-one, you know, potting, talking shit vibe, you haven't been on Ladies Pitch. So this is your first time?
No.
Actually just me and you.
Yep. Awesome. Yay, I'm special.
this is going to be good. Okay, Dory. The name Dory, tell the listeners as to why you are nicknamed Dory.
All right. So I am known for being forgetful, and not just like your regular run-of-the-mill forgetful, like literally like Dory forgetful. Like I'll have 20 conversations at the same time, and I will forget every single one.
She's not lying, and she's not exaggerating.
I really am not. You always have to redirect me.
And when we say Dory, in case no one knows, we're talking about Dory from Finding Nemo.
Yes, the one that could only remember 10 seconds of her life.
Yeah, that's pretty much Dory. So Dory and I, we met at work, right? We used to work with one another. We met at work. I don't even remember how we met. I don't even remember our first
time. I do.
You do? Look at that. She remembers.
Oh, my God. I remember something. Yes. I remember because I used to, when I first started working there, I was working 4 to midnight. And you used to pick up OT doing appointments.
Okay. Oh, so I was already on the morning shift. I was just doing overtime.
Yeah. So you would always be, like, I would always happen to be in the front where you were. So that's how we became friends.
Okay. Yeah, and it was like a clique of us that we were, everybody on that shift was like super cool with one another, and we were all like tight.
I know. Yeah. I loved it there.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's not the same.
I
miss it. It's not the same.
I bet, because it's a bunch of weirdos now.
I wouldn't say
sorry
all that.
To whoever's listening that, you know, knew, but I mean, I'm just saying. Like, it was great when I was there.
It was a different vibe. It was a different clique. It was a different vibe. Like, everybody, first of all, worked really well for the most part with one another, and we just got along. Like, whoever you worked with on that shift was like super fucking cool,
right?
You know,
there was no like,
there was,
I could only
bullshit.
Think of one person. I could just think of one person, but even she was cool.
Yeah, I know exactly who that one person is, and she is super cool, but just being super cool personally and just having poor work ethic are two different things, and it sucks because it's like, I don't dislike you, I just dislike the way you work.
Right.
So that's
I know, difference. Right. And you know, I feel like sometimes people can't differentiate that. Like, they just feel like, oh my God, like, I hate the way this person works, so they like automatically write them off. Like, I just can't stand this person because they suck at work.
Yeah, there's a difference. And I used to work
unfair.
When I first started, I used to work the overnight shift, right? And my coworker at the time, it was me and this other guy. We became super cool, like super, super cool. He used to call me brother, and I used to call him brother. That's how cool we got. But he sucked as a coworker. Like, his work ethic was poor. He was lazy. He wouldn't take initiative. He just wouldn't do shit. And like, it would fall on me, the work, all the fucking time, and I hate it. We would clash with that. But once we left work, like, we used to go to lunch, and we used to go get lunch together in the middle of the night. Like, he would drive me to the Heights to go get food. We would hang outside of work, mad cool. But when it actually came to working, he fucking sucked. He sucked ass. But I knew how to separate the two. Like, he's a cool ass person, but comes to work, like, I just
don't want to work with you.
That's I just don't want to work with you, but I had no choice. Like, it was just me and him doing that specific work in the overnight, and I was like, oh God. But yeah, so that's the meaning behind the nickname Dory. So she's had that nickname for a few years, and the people that she still talks to at work and stuff like that, like, we just all refer to her as Dory. That's it. We don't even call
right.
her
it's
her real
just,
name.
Yeah, it just stuck. You know, you want to laugh. So I was talking to Gabby. Gabby is my 8-year-old daughter, but she's like 8 going on, I don't know,
she's
50.
She's an old soul.
And we were talking about stage names because I was like writing for my book or whatever. And I'm like, Mama, what do you think would be like a good last name to go with Dory? And I told her, I was like, I think I want to just name myself Vanessa Murphy.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I told her, I was like, I think my stage name is going to be Vanessa Murphy. Like, that's going to be my alias or whatever for, like, you know, as an author.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, but why? And I was like, because I just don't feel like Dory Murphy kind of matches. So I think that maybe I should go with Vanessa Murphy. But I really like the last name Murphy, so I want it to be Murphy.
Mm-hmm. Is it because you love the bar Murphy's Law?
Yes.
We're going to get into that story about this past weekend because I went over to Connecticut to spend the weekend with Dory. We went out. We got wasted. So we're going to get to that story because that shit was kind of nuts. So,
it was fun.
Yeah. So really quickly, you have a blog, right? Silent Confessions.
Yes.
You've had the blog for maybe like 6-7 months already, right? You've been
blogging? Yeah, since September. Mm-hmm.
And I commend you. First of all, I love your writing. I love how transparent you are in your writing. And I have shed a few tears with some of your blog entries because I know that those were very personal and they were super vulnerable. And I always appreciate that. You know, I love me emotional shit. But yeah, so Silent Confessions, like, what was going through your mind when you decided to like start a blog entry and name it Silent Confessions? Like, what was your goal with starting this blog?
So when I started the blog, all right. So the name was just, all right. So initially I wanted the blog to be about my experiences in dating. Hence, you know, the confessions part, you know, but I had been thinking about that for a while, just because, like, dating sucks. And to whoever's listening who hasn't heard before, I'm a widow. My husband passed. So it was my, like, it was the way that I was thinking about it was, this is my story post-loss. Like, this is who I am now. And my very first entry is Welcome to the Shit Show, where I give you a brief introduction of how messy my life can get. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of like the whole thing behind the blog. And then it just slowly kind of just evolved. Like, it became more personal. It was more about, like, my experiences in general. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of just became like my journal. And every time that I just had big feelings and I had nowhere like for them to go, I would just put them down. I just started putting them on paper.
Yeah.
And that's it. And I don't know, here we are. And I don't ever want to let it go. And I think I have like 100 entries now.
No, you're actually very consistent with it. And I have my own blog that I started. And I'm not as consistent as you are. Like, the thing is that I love to write. I've always loved to write since I was a child. I had an English teacher in junior high school tell my mom that she should always encourage me to continue to write, because he just loved my writing. And I would simply write, like, when it came to writing, I was never, like, sugarcoating shit, never sugarcoating my life, my feelings, and so forth. So it's very different, right, from potting. Even though it's a creative outlet, it's different from potty, because I feel like with my writing, I'm a lot more vulnerable and transparent as opposed to when I'm potting. It's weird.
But I agree. Yeah. It's like, no, because it's like, it's a little bit more personal, because at the moment where you're putting it out there, it's like, it's yours. It's your baby. And you're just like, you're caring for it. And you want it to be perfect because, you know, it's yours. It's your baby and you want it to be good before you release it out into the world, because mm-hmm. you know that once it's out there, people are going to have opinions. And
for sure. And you that's know, what I'm like, afraid
you
of.
Might
I'm
write not... about something that'll hurt feelings and stuff. You say you are afraid of what?
That's what I'm hurting afraid feelings? Of. I don't want to, no, not hurting feelings. And I don't want to say opinions, because people's opinions about what I write about, I honestly don't give a fuck about. You know what I mean? And I'm very good at taking constructive criticism. I never get defensive and I'm like, no, but this, I'm all for hearing, you know what I'm saying? Like, the constructive criticism from people that are supporting my work, clearly, you know what I mean? But, and even recently when I started the podcast, you know this very much, that I had someone, I actually wrote a very like personal and transparent blog entry, and I had a family member actually get very upset with me and like stop talking to me because they felt like I was talking shit about my mom. I wrote something personal that was for my grandmother, but I mentioned my mom in the blog entry, and you know, this person got very upset and was like,
I remember.
Yeah, you remember, right? So that's, I guess when you say hurting feelings, I might be just a little bit afraid of that, because my story is crazy. Like, the people that know me, and I've shared a part of my life and a lot of stories that have happened to me and things that I've gone through in my life, they're like, yo, what the fuck? And since I was a teenager and things in my life were occurring, I always had my mind set on, like, I wanted to write a book about my life. I wanted to write a book about my life, and not because I wanted to shit on anybody, but simply because I thought about how many other people out there in the world have experienced what I have experienced. And I've always wanted to, like, tell other people or reassure other people that, like, yo, you're going to be okay. You know what I mean? Because yeah. I wish that I would have had someone when I was going through that tell me, yo, it's going to be okay. Because when you're going through the shit you're going through, you never feel like it's going to be okay. You feel like you're just going
to... Right, you feel like you're drowning.
And
like, there's no light at the end of the tunnel.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I agree. I always liked writing, but I never thought of myself as... Like, I never thought that I had, like, an actual story to tell. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until... I don't know, maybe like recent years, mm-hmm. were the one to be like, bitch, you need to write a book because of all my crazy stories. But to me, that was just my life. I didn't see them as crazy stories. It was just the things that I had been through.
Right.
And I don't know. But then I started the blog and I started writing and I'm writing and I've been consistently writing. And I started my book and I'm very excited about it. And I don't know how long it'll take me to finish it, but I already have a lot of material for it. I just got to kind of like put it together. Mm-hmm. And then we will see how we go about publishing. It's funny because I have a 19-year-old daughter, guys, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. And
that's my other daughter. Well, that's my
only daughter. Yeah, she really is. Mm-hmm. And she's been dating, and I use that word loosely, mm-hmm. This guy or whatever, he's like a music producer or whatever. So she was like, when your book is ready, give it to me so that I could give it to him because he knows publishers.
He has the connect.
So I said, okay. He has a connect. And then I got the same thing from her aunt, actually. Mm-hmm. So her aunt that lives in Florida, her younger sister is in publishing here in New York.
I think you should do it. Like I said, you never know who you're going to touch with your story. You know, you don't know what tough times someone is going through, because I know a lot of your story and it is inspiring. And it's inspiring because we don't realize how strong we are until we go through.
We have to be.
Yeah. Adversities.
Until you have to be strong.
Yes. You don't know how strong you are until you have to be strong and you survive all these adversities and you survive everything that was meant to basically kill you, bring you down.
Right, you know?
To break you. Exactly. And that's how I see it too with my story. And I actually, for the past like 2 years, I have been writing my story. It's so much that I don't even know like what to put in, what not to put in, because it's just a lot. It's just a lot. And I always say, and I always know that I would have to really like truly face the consequences if I ever go through with it and actually like publish a book. Mm-hmm. About things, because I've thought about like changing names, which is probably what I would do. Change a lot of names just so, you know, to protect the privacy of like certain individuals.
Nah, fuck that. And so let me tell you,
I don't want to be sued. Like, think about all of those things.
Nah, fuck that shit. So let me tell you about, all right. So when I started my blog and I started writing like all my reckless shit, I figured, I was like, you know what? Some people are going to like it. Some people are going to love it. Some people are going to hate it. Initially, I felt like if my in-laws ever came across my blog, they were going to be really offended because I was very honest about what a piece of shit my husband was. Mm-hmm. I loved him. He was the love of my life. And I wish that he was still here, but he was a piece of shit. So I always felt like if my in-laws came across it, like they would have probably like some animosity or whatever. So the book that I'm writing is not my, like it's not my story, and I didn't change the names. I left the names as they are. I mean, you know this more better than anybody. I started writing about I don't want to call it a relationship because it's really not a relationship, but just somebody that I've been seeing for the last few months or whatever. And I was in love, and you know this, I was in love.
I know.
And I used to, he was my inspiration for everything.
Oh, he was
and
your muse for sure.
Yes, he really was. I had so much, like I had written so much to this man, either about him or for him, or just like things that I liked about him, or like the reasons why I loved him. I wrote poetry for this fucking guy. I just wrote so much stuff for this guy. And so what I decided to do is I am going to use all of that material and I'm just going to kind of, so I started writing about how we met, mm-hmm. to kind of tie into all the other things that I wrote, because I figured that I'm going to make it kind of like a, I don't know, not so much like a conversation, but I want it to be like, you know, my perspective and the reasons why I wrote the things that I wrote to him at each particular time when I wrote it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's going to be a, you know, New York Times bestseller or anything like that, but that is where my inspiration lies right now.
Yeah. So, Dory, I was fortunate enough to read the first three chapters of this book that you're working on. And in chapter one, you brought up something that I've never heard before, and you used a term that I've never heard before, and that's widow's fire. Do you want to explain exactly like what that is?
Okay. So I had never heard about it before either. It's something that I learned from like my grief support groups or whatever. And it is actually like, it's like this insatiable craving for sex. It's like this uncontrollable urge that you just, like, you just can't get enough. Like, you literally feel like your vagina's on fire. Like, you need to come, like, 100 times in a day. And I used to feel guilty about it because I'm like, I should be sad. I shouldn't be horny. But then I learned that it was normal. And then I didn't feel so bad anymore because it was, it's really bad. It's, like, I used to masturbate, like, oh, my God, like, 6-7 times a day, maybe more. And it's like,
six or seven times a day?
Yeah. And it's like, I would come and it wouldn't be enough. And I would keep going and I would come again. And it was just never enough. Yeah. It's some crazy, crazy stuff. And then, you know, eventually I moved on. Right. I thought I was going to break my rose because it was heavily overused. But then, yeah. And then I moved on to like real penises and then I was okay.
Well, I remember the last time that you were on Ladies Pitch, we were talking about the hammer toy. And you were talking about, like, vagina and anal penetration. And we were like, girl, like, your shit is going to be numb.
Nah. I have a clitoris of steel.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the first time that I've ever heard of that term. But it makes sense because I've seen, like, in movies and stuff like that, like, remember Wedding Crashers? The guy used to crash weddings. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sorry, not crash weddings. Well, they crash weddings, clearly, Wedding Crashers. But the guy used to crash funerals. And he would go after women that had just, like, lost their husbands. But now it kind of makes sense because it's like, oh, shit. Like, women are really horny after losing their husbands.
I think it's just, like, your body's response to the stress. I don't know. Maybe it's like a toxic thing. I don't know if it happens to everybody. Mm-hmm.
Was that happening to other women in the support group?
Hell yeah. Oh my God. So many. And at first I used to see like, because all right. So it was like a Facebook support group. And I'll start by saying this. Like, I loved it because everybody in that group knew exactly the way that I felt. And it was something that, and it's something that is like, unless you've gone through it, you can't really relate. Like, you can empathize with the person, but you can't really relate because it's like, it's a major loss. Like, you lose everything, like your best friend, your partner, your, you know, everything. So it's like, even though I would like talk to like my friends and vent and whatever, and I would journal and the therapist and whatever, it nothing felt better than when I would participate in the group, in the grief group, because they knew exactly what I meant. They knew exactly what I felt. They just knew it all. So I would always see like some of the women would post like, you know, like, crazy case of widow's fire right now or whatever. And I used to be like, what the hell is that? And then I would go through the comments until I finally learned what it was. And I was like, oh, like, that's what's happening to my body. And yeah, it's very much a real thing. It's crazy. I don't know. And I say that it might be a toxic thing because I remember like, with my husband, whenever we were like, when sad things happened or whatever, like our automatic response was sex.
But you know what it like is? It's just the feeling that you feel after sex. It's the, you feel good.
The release.
Yeah, the release. You feel good. Like you feel, your mind is clear, you know, like, so I guess it's that feeling that you feel afterwards. So when something is going, when you're sad, when something is going wrong or whatever, sex or masturbation can make you feel so much better. But it's temporary, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
it's a temporary thing for me. You know what? You know what has happened to me after masturbation? I want to get like a specialist or someone like a sex therapist or someone in that field on the podcast. What has happened to me? I've cried after masturbating.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I've cried after sex before too. It's only happened like maybe like twice. But it is a long time ago. It happened before. And I'm not talking about like a cry, like an ugly cry. Like, no, it's just like an overwhelmed feeling of emotions. And I just,
Yeah, that's never happened to me.
Yeah, it has. And I'm actually trying to think back if the sex was actually that great for me to cry. And if I had to think about it, then it probably wasn't. But at that moment, I don't know. I might have probably been going through something in particular at that time and just.
Maybe.
Yeah, just the orgasm just took it over the edge.
What you just said reminded me of this thing that I was reading this article the other day on Rachel Bilson. She's the girl from, remember that movie Jumper?
Yes.
She's the girl from Jumper.
I know who she is, yeah.
She has a podcast. And she interviewed somebody else, and that other person was saying how she had never orgasmed during sex until she was 40. And Rachel told her, you know, like, I can totally relate because I, you know, like, she couldn't come from sex either until she was 38. And I was just like, when I first read it, I was like, I would hate to be like one of those guys, one of the guys that she fucked. Because my manhood would be like on the floor after that.
Ego.
That means that she probably faked it, or I don't even know. But I was just like, damn.
We're gonna delve a little deeper into that. But let me just ask you a quick question: have you ever had sex with someone where you didn't orgasm, but the sex was still amazing? Or do you need an orgasm for the sex to be considered amazing?
No. I've had good sex that didn't end. If I'm too drunk, I won't come.
Wow.
Yeah.
That happens to men, though. I've heard that.
Yeah. Oh, God, yes. That happened. That actually happened to me a couple of weeks ago where he was too drunk and he couldn't come. And I was dying, girl. I was like, I was ready to give up. I was just like.
He was hard the entire time?
No, like, it was like on and off. And then it's like, I'm like, yo, my jaw was like, bitch.
So your clit is made out of steel, but not your jaw.
Bro, like, shit. But then eventually he did. And I'm like, finally. But I was so tired after. I was just like, dude.
For me, it can be great, but just the orgasm is just like, oh.
Well, of course, that's like
that's the goal. So,
right,
and exactly. If I have multiple, it's even great. But no, I have had amazing sex where I didn't orgasm. It's rare because for me overall. Like, I have to have some sort of, like, connection. And this is something that, like, my guy friends make fun of me over because they want me to just be a dude and just be like, yeah, I have great sex with everybody I fuck with. No, but I have to have some sort of connection, right? So when I already have, let's say, before the sex, that mental connection, and then we have sex, and then it's that physical connection, like, everything is intertwined, and I'm like, it just makes the sex so much better for me, I guess. When there's a connection.
I agree.
Yeah, it makes it so much better. So sometimes for me, during foreplay, like, I'm ready to orgasm. It's crazy. Like, if I'm really, like, in tune with that person, with their body, and they're in tune with mine, literally, you can just sit there and just, like, stare at me, and I could probably orgasm on myself. I'll come on myself.
Oh, you're crazy.
Yeah. No, seriously. No, like I like that to be that intense. It's insane the way that the right person could really like turn me on. It's crazy. I can orgasm from like giving you head.
Like, oh, me too.
Yeah, if that. It has to be on that level though.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I guess that has happened to me before too. Yeah. You know, one time I came from a guy sucking on my toes.
Yeah, of course.
I was very surprised because I'm not a feet person. Mm-hmm. And yo, I have this thing with feet that like, I just hate feet. Like I can't, I just don't like feet, like nobody's feet. I struggle with my kids' feet because they're my kids, but fuck, do I hate feet.
You struggle with the little humans that you pushed out? Damn, you really hate feet.
Yo, I hate feet. I hate feet. So when this guy said, like I want to suck on your toes, I was very hesitant because I'm just like, ew, like, no. But he did it, and it was, girl, I was like, did I just come? Like, did that just happen?
I feel like every woman.
But it was just
woman,
that one time because I still hate feet.
I feel every feet. Woman should experience that though at least once. That's some real freak shit though. That's got to come from like a real freak dude.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because a lot of guys are freaks, so they claim to be freaks, and everybody's definition of what they consider freaky is different. So, because you like to spank me and occasionally choke me, like, I don't even consider that you're freaky. That's just...
Yeah, that's just... I feel like that's kind of, like, regular now. That's and it's kind of standard.
That's a regular Friday night. Like, dude, what are we doing?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. My current sex partner was very vanilla. I've told you that before.
Mm-hmm. We've had this conversation.
He was very vanilla. But it's funny because in the beginning, like, it was... Like, it was vanilla in terms of variety, mm-hmm. but it was so good. I was like, yeah, I could just have vanilla sex forever because it was that good.
Mm-hmm.
Which is rare for me because, I want to do all the crazy shit. Mm-hmm. But now, of course, I entered his life and now he is no longer vanilla.
What? Now he's 21 flavors, like Baskin-Robbins. Hell yeah.
It's so funny. I find it hilarious. And it's like...
Did you ever tell him that you considered him vanilla?
No. I mean, I wrote about it and he read it, but I never like actually told him. Mm-hmm. You know what? That's not true. I think a few weeks ago, I mentioned something like, I take credit for the way that you have sex now. Or whatever, because like in the beginning, you didn't do all of these things that you do now.
And you know what's crazy about that? Once you unlock those features, you never want to go back to being how you were before. And mm-hmm. I'm going to say that I'm going to speak for myself because once I got a taste of like some real freaky nasty shit, that's it. Like that was on the resume. Like that was something that was required with my next partner. You need to do that. Like, that's the only way that I'm going to actually feel 100% like sexually satisfied. Like, I cross that off.
I know.
Now you got to be able to do this. Next, now you got to be able to do that. So, shoot, I can tell you the first time that a guy spit in my mouth, it was something that was never, it was never even spoke about. Ever. He never said, I want to do this. I never had any interest in it. I don't even remember. And I'm just going to go back a little bit when you said about the podcast you was listening to Rachel Blissen?
Blissen? Yeah.
So when she like encountered her first orgasm in her 30s, I can definitely say that I unlocked a lot of those features in my sex life in my 30s. For sure. And after my relationships, like not even in my relationships did I unlock those features. None of them did.
Oh, well, no, I unlocked a lot of my second, in my marriage. Yeah,
even with my recent ex, I unlocked those features in him. You know, like I want to say like I told him a lot of stuff in the bedroom, but it was afterwards, after the relationship, me being single, there was a particular person that unlocked all of those features in me. And like I said, spitting in the mouth, like that was nothing that was talked about. I would never like express any interest in it, but it was being in the moment. We had that connection and it was like, boom, it happened. And I was like, oh, you're nasty.
You know what's crazy?
Like, that damn, it was do it again
for me. No, right, exactly. So I hooked up with this guy. I don't know. I guess it was like during my widow fire phase or whatever. But I hooked up with this guy, and that was the nastiest sex I ever had, and that's recent. I mean, I'm 36. I was 34. And it was the nastiest sex I ever had. Literally the nastiest sex I ever had. I, like you said, I never had any interest in like the whole spitting thing. Like it was just like so crazy. But then when he did it, it was just like, oh, we like this. Okay. yeah, no, he was very, right, that he was the very, first thing. Was very open. It's so funny. I nicknamed him the spitter.
Yes.
That's
yes,
why
yes,
his
yes.
name is the spitter.
Yes. So, yeah, so I think that happens for a lot of women, though. And I think it's because we don't really know, like, when we first start having sex, and I started having sex for the first time, like, as a teenager. So, mm-hmm. you know, you don't know what the fuck you're doing. The person you're having sex with is also, like, you know, I'm going to assume is around your age. They don't really know what they're doing. They're not all for pleasing you. They're just for pleasing themselves just to get that nut, you know? They don't even think about more than once. It's very mm-hmm. selfish. The sex is very selfish when you first start, especially if you start at a young age. Then right. as you get older, you start learning your body. You start learning what you want with
and what you like.
And what you like. Mm-hmm. And then you start, like, you know, and then you get with that man that's actually into pleasing you. And there are men that make it all about you during sex.
Yeah.
And boy. Then you're able to, you know, I get it. There's a lot of selfish lovers, yo. There really are a lot of selfish lovers.
Yeah.
It sucks because I consider myself a pleaser.
Me too.
So,
me too.
Like you can't say I'm a damn selfish lover.
Like, it brings me pleasure to pleasure the other person. Does that make sense?
Sure.
It's so, I don't know. And I feel like it's not common. Like I can tell you, all right, when I was 15, my second boyfriend who is my daughter's father now. And he was the first guy I ever gave head to. And I was very hesitant because I'm like, oh my God, like that's not supposed to go in your mouth. He taught me. He told me what to do. And you know, it's so funny because I remember that the very, very first time I used to think like, all right, if we have to do this, then we have to like, I don't know, like make it pleasurable somehow or whatever. Like, you know, like this is something that he likes and this is something that he wants. And I'm like, all right, how do I do this? So I started picturing like if I was sucking on a lollipop, literally. Like if I was sucking a lollipop. And I don't know, that seemed to work for me. he enjoyed it. And, you know, it is what it is. And at first, I never swallowed. I used to spit that shit out. I used to be like, oh no. Like those are babies. Like, there's just so many things that I used to say like, no, like I wouldn't do that or whatever. And I fucking love that shit now.
Yeah. Yeah,
so I tell my daughter that now because, you know, she's 19 and she's active and she's like, oh, I'm never doing that and I'm never doing this and I'm never doing that.
Oh, and I was
like, say that now. Like, wait till you're like 30.
Yeah.
I'm like, none of like that stuff doesn't come now. That comes when you're older.
Yeah, for sure. I think I gave head for the first time when I was 18. I was 18 and it was my boyfriend at the time. And then I got into my first relationship at 19 and we were together for 8 years. And he literally, yeah, he literally was like, he never came from head. It's crazy. In 8 years that we were together, he never came from head. He was one of those.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. You know what's funny? When guys tell me that, I always feel like it's like a line. like they're just dropping a line because it's like, because they want you to like, I guess, take it as a challenge and do it.
At times, I believe so. And I have encountered men that don't. And that, don't get me wrong, that doesn't make me feel any type of way. Like, oh my God, my skills are trash. It's just every man is different. Every man likes head differently too. Not every man likes head the same. You know what I mean? So it's all about learning like what that person likes, what they don't like. And I like to push buttons. I definitely like to push buttons and see like how far I can go with pleasing you. Like, okay, let me do this or let me do that. All right. If he likes it. And like, I'd be testing. I'd be trying to push those boundaries. Like, they'll be like, no, I don't do that. Okay, let's see. You know, let me see if I can take you there where you at least allow me to just do it a little bit, you know? And at times it works. Sometimes it doesn't. They're like, bitch, I told you I don't do that.
I feel like it's, so for me, it's more, I unleash my freaky side, I guess, during like texting. You know, like sexting or like phone sex or whatever, like the nastiest thing that I could think of or whatever, that'll be like what I'll write or what I'll say. And depending on what their reaction is, then I know that it's something that like, it's like either a green light or a red light. Like, okay, we can do that based on like whatever the reaction is to like the message or whatever. Mm. I mean, Yeah.
You know, sexting for me doesn't come to like after we have sex. I can't sex with you before.
I can, but it's just like not thinking. Like if it's somebody that like, I don't know, like we just, I don't know. I'm a nasty bitch. My imagination is crazy. And I just be thinking about like the way that it felt with somebody else because, you know, I don't know how this person is going to make me feel yet if we haven't slept together yet.
That's why so I can't sex, because then you know what it is. I'm going to start building like a sexual expectation. And then after we have sex for the first time, if it doesn't like meet those expectations, I'm just like, blah. So you know what?
Yeah, but that's
sexing.
Okay.
Right. And it is, but I'm just like, oh, I'm not going to want to do it with you again. Just like, blah.
And that's okay. And that's when you let them go. That's perfectly fine.
Right. So that's why for me, it's like, I don't know. I guess I want to be like intrigued from I want to be intrigued by what I don't know, if that makes any sense. So, for example, I want to go.
You embrace the unknown.
Yes. The mystery behind not knowing. Like there are certain men that exude a crazy amount of sexual energy and they never have to open their mouths. It's like you've never seen a man like that. Like you can tell. That it's something about him that he's like, yo, he will fucking put my fucking body through the bed like crazy. But he does not. He never says a word. Like, that's the type of shit I like, because I want to find out if I'm right. And I'm more intrigued by that. So for me, sexting, and I like do the air quotes, sexting for me before I actually have sex with you would be just like having a conversation. Just like a intellectual conversation, I would say. Like that to me is more interesting at first.
This is why I like meeting people in person. Yeah. So the only guy that I've ever like, well, I can't. All right. So post loss, I was definitely going through my widow's fire here. I made an appointment for my boys to get a haircut. And I went or whatever, you know, first time there or whatever, and when I went and I asked for the guy, I just, nigga, I melted, yo. I swear to God, I feel like I melted. Yeah. And then I was just like, damn. And then whatever, but you know, it was during COVID, everybody had masks on or whatever, but there was something in the way that he looked at me, like beyond the mask, like it was like flirtatious looks. I can't even explain to you what it was, but there was there was this pull, you know, towards him or whatever. So we ended up exchanging numbers or whatever for, you know, barber purposes, supposedly, air quotes. And I remember that same day, like later on in the day, and I texted him and I was like, hey, I'm sorry if this is really forward, but are you single? Like, you know, I would like to ask you out or whatever. And he was like, oh, he was like, I'm flattered, but I'm married. And I was like, oh, of course you are. And I personally don't care, but I respected the fact that that was the first thing he told me. And I was like, all right, so that means he set that boundary for me. So I was like, okay, you know, it is what it is. And then it was just like, kind of like professional or whatever for a little bit. And then I went to Florida. And while I was in Florida, he started texting me. And at first I was like, I don't know. It was kind of like walking on eggshells a little bit because it was like, I don't know how far I can go. So it was like pushing, but very little. So he was like texting me and he would like send me pictures and then he would ask me for pictures. And then one day I was just like, you know, like a few weeks ago, you turned me down because you're married and now you're here texting me. So what does this mean? And he was like, I don't know. He was like, there's just something about you and I want to know more. And I was like, okay, well, you know, same. Like, it was just
did you show him something. More?
I did, but it wasn't until like months later. I don't know. We kind of just built like a friendship. And we would talk and, you know, whenever I would take my boys for haircuts or whatever, like we just got like really, really cool. And then he separated from his wife. And when he separated from his wife, he became more consistent in like reaching out to me and stuff. And he was telling me, he told me about like whatever he was going through or whatever. And, you know, it happened. It finally happened. And it was everything I expected it to be.
Really? Why did I think you were going to give a bad review?
No, it was everything I expected it to be.
Okay.
And we still talk, you know, he's still my barber. And now he's divorced and he moved out or whatever. But he's like his focus is on, which is something that I really fucking love about him, is just his drive and his ambition.
Oh, I love and that too. I love
fucking
that.
Love it. Like he's a firefighter full time. The barber thing is a side job, and then he's always like taking classes to like do better and be better. And he like wants to open his own business. And I just love that drive in him, you know. And like we have amazing conversations, and you know the sex is awesome. And I'm just like, you know, whenever you're ready, like, I'm right here, you know.
Cause put my fire out, baby.
Not even, like, it's even, I appreciate him. I appreciate him. And I was going through, like, a really tough time a few weeks ago. And he happened to reach out to me. And we were talking or whatever. And I told him about, like, what I was going through and whatnot. And he was like, you're going to be fine. Like, everything is going to be okay. And he was like, just, you know, like, take care of yourself or whatever. And then he put, I love you at the end. And at first,
did he say, I love you or love you?
No, difference. I love you.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was, I'm like, let me not, you know, like, me being who I am, like, I overthink. But I was like, V, like, don't overthink it, you know, like, he's being supportive because, you know, you guys are friends or whatever. So I just wrote, I love you too. And I left it at that because, you know,
there's nothing wrong with that. I feel like some people are just so afraid to tell one another that they love one another. And it doesn't have to be like a romantic, oh my God, I want to
right, like a in love thing.
But when you have like a certain love, care, respect for someone, like, life is too short, man. Like, listen, I love you. I love you. You know, whatever. I love you. I love you. Whatever it may mean. But it's like, I never, like, the way life is, and because I know how certain things have happened in my life and other people's lives, like, you never sometimes have that last, like, chance to tell someone how you feel. Mm-hmm. Like, yo, I appreciate you. I respect you. Like, I love you. Like, thank you for being there. Thank you for, you know, being part of my support system or whatever right. it may be. So he knew you were having a tough time during that period. You know, what that would have done for you. You know what I mean? To be like, yo, I'm here for you. Like, I love you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's dope.
I don't know. He's my, I don't know. I don't even know like what to call him. Sometimes I don't even like consider him like anything. Mm-hmm. Because I just like, I don't want to set myself up for failure. Like, I know that I like him and I know that like, if we were to ever like decide to start something, it would be great because like compatibility wise, like it's there, like it's all there in every sense of the word. Like he's a Scorpio.
Do I have a sound effect for that? Hold on. I think I might have one for you.
Oh my God.
Steer clear. No. Steer clear. He's a firefighter too. No, I'm joking. I'm joking. I'm not joking about the boo, but I'm joking about telling you to steer clear.
Yeah,
I have to be toxic for a minute because you say he's a firefighter and I swear to God, what are firefighters, police officers? And now that I've had my experience with a paramedic, I could never. I couldn't personally. I feel like they're the biggest fucking thoughts, yo.
I don't know. I feel like it really depends on the person. Like, I don't know. That's bruh. Something else that I really like about him.
It's like, just
that
he's,
listen, he's very, like, no bullshit. And he's honest. And I like that. Mm-hmm. Like, and then he has this, like, calming presence. And it's something that it's always been there. And you know how I am. I am dramatica. And you
translation,
know, fucking,
she's dramatic for my non.
Yeah, I am dramatic and impulsive and I'm crazy. And just to sum it up, I'm like kind of crazy. And he's like, he mellows me out and he'll be like, you need to chill.
No,
and
I get it. Yeah. I need to
I'm
be with
the kind
someone
of person
like that,
that
too.
Needs that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I need somebody
like,
with a calming nature.
Somebody. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't be with somebody that's going to be just as impulsive as I am because then we're just going to self-destruct. And I think that that's what's happening with my current partner. We bring out like that side in each other and it's great in the moment, but then it's like, it's toxic and it's impulsive and I don't know. It's addicting.
I need that calming nature. That's a must. It needs to be like, it needs to be a good balance of like, you're in touch with your emotions, you know, but you also have that logical, rational, calming side to you where you're able to, like, tell me, listen, you're doing too much right now. Like, I need you to bring it down.
Like, you out of 10, I need you out of 2.
Yeah, you're out of 10, like, I need you out of 2. Like, I respond very well to that. Because I can't, I was with someone for 8 years that when I was on 10, he was on 20. When he was on 20, I was on 30. So ooh, you can imagine how that shit went. It was a chaos 24/7. Well, not 24/7, but most of the time it was chaos. You know what I'm saying? So when you have that good balance, that when you're at a 10 and that person is at a 2, they can bring you down to at least a 4 and you're able to just be well balanced, then it's cool. Like, I respond well to that because you kind of like bring me back to like, center, like, yo, listen, we here now.
It makes you think. It makes you analyze yourself.
Yeah,
Analyze yourself. Like, okay, maybe I am doing too much. Like, let me chill.
Yeah, for sure.
But then there are times where it's just like, fuck it, I don't want to chill. I want to wreak havoc. Is that just me?
No, that's you know what it is. We're, you and I are both comfortable in chaos. It's crazy.
I
tell my therapist that I'm like, most of my childhood, I want to say from like, and I'm going to go as far back as I can remember from the age of 3 all the way to like when I left my house at 17, my household was chaos 85% of the time. And that shit feels so, I don't know, it feels comforting to me. So when things are just too peaceful, I try to like and this is very self-sabotaging, I try to create the chaos that doesn't exist and doesn't need to exist, because it's perfectly okay for you to, you know, live a peaceful life or try to create a peaceful life for yourself and create these boundaries where you make sure you live in that peace. And I'm just doing that now. I'm doing that now at the age of 37, 38. And it's hard at times. Like I go back to it and I see myself doing it. And it is, yo, it's work. It's work because you have to break that shit. You got to break that shit because it's not normal. And all you're going to do is wreak havoc and freaking create chaos with like, with everything. And that's the majority of like, that's how it's been in my life. My mom is chaotic as fuck. You know, both my parents are chaotic as fuck. And they made me, like, they conditioned me to think that that shit is normal. And it's not. My mom is
chaotic, but she's toxic in a different way.
Yeah, yeah. And these are a lot of the conversations that we've had. And I've always wanted to, like, you know, create an episode. And I've told you about, like, just, because I have a lot of friends where our parents have a lot of things in common. Either narcissistic ways or yes. You know, extremely toxic parents, and just it's crazy. It's crazy, yeah. But and then those are the things now that like at times, you know, with some of the like things I've learned in therapy, like with my mom and I've tried to like have conversations with her and try to like tell her how a lot of those things has affected me now as an adult woman. She takes no accountability.
No,
she is allergic to accountability. Like, what? Right?
It's like they take it as a, it's like this personal attack because they see things differently.
Yeah,
and I try to explain to my mom that, and I'm like, listen, just because you feel this doesn't mean that I feel the same. Like, remember, we are two different people, and even though we experience certain things together, we also experience them individually. So what you see is not what I see. And what you feel is not what I feel. And, you know, you need to understand that. But that bitch never gets nothing. She never understands.
Yeah, my mom is the same way. And it's a broken record. I'm just like, yo, I've accepted the fact that they're just, I tell my therapist, listen, my parents are old. Like, they're stuck in their ways. Nothing I say, nothing I do will ever, like, they'll never take accountability for this shit. And, like, it's really not even my responsibility at this point. But it is my responsibility to set boundaries and not allow them to, like, continue to be toxic with me. Like, I don't have to deal with that shit just because you guys are my parents. That's how I see it. She doesn't understand that when I tell her that. I'm like, yo, to be completely honest, like, I'm not a child anymore. I'm an independent woman. Like, I live on my own. Like, I have my own life. I don't have to deal. I don't have to deal with your toxicity. I really don't. So the minute, like, there are times that I go without speaking to my mom because she starts that bullshit. And I'm just like, click, I hang up the phone on my mother. Like, I give zero fucks. I will hang up the phone on her. And she'll be like, you're so disrespectful. And I'm like, no, you're reaching a place where you're triggering me. And you're triggering me to, like, be toxic and disrespectful. And before I get there, because I'm going to be really mad at myself if I get out of my zone. So let me discontinue this call. We'll talk at a different time when we're able to actually have an actual adult conversation. And I will hang up the motherfucking phone on her. Like, listen, to be totally honest, the last time I spoke to my mom was back in, like, November. We're currently not speaking because I created these boundaries where I refuse to have these conversations with her. Not even conversations, these arguments, because she wants to argue. I'm not doing it. You're not fucking up my day. Like, that day I was actually having a great day. And she actually did get me out of my zone a bit. And I was so mad that I was crying afterwards. Like, fuck, why did I feed into it? Like, I already know how she likes to trigger me. Why did I do it to myself?
Isn't it crazy, though?
Yeah. And I immediately, like, after I hung up on her, like, I cried. I'm like, fuck. It was my day off. I was having a great day. I was having a great morning. Here she comes with her bullshit. And yeah, and that was the last time I spoke to her. Like, I know that she's doing good or whatever, like, clearly through family and stuff like that. But, like, she won't reach out to me and I won't reach out to her. And it's like, you're the parent. You already know right. How I feel.
Isn't it crazy, though, how it's like, they just know, like, it's like, whatever. I hate that. I feel like they just need to do better.
Yeah. And what's crazy is that my mom now, at her big old age, like, you know, she had a very traumatic experience back mm-hmm. in 2021. I don't think I shared this story on the podcast, but my mom was like a victim of like a random shooting. And she was mm-hmm. caught like in the crossfire or whatever. And she was shot in the leg. So,
oh my God.
Yeah, she was shot in the leg. And, her leg around her knee. And that knee, she had knee replacement surgery, like I believe like 2 years before. So luckily it missed like the plate that she has on her knee.
Yeah.
And it went right through. The bullet went right through. Long story short, she suffered from a lot of PTSD afterwards, you know, a lot of nightmares, a lot of things that happen with, you know, going through a traumatic experience like that. And as also because 4 other people were shot and 1 of them died, like someone that was like dropped dead right next to her where she fell.
Oh my God, that's so scary.
Yeah. So she lives with that could have been me. And he was an 18-year-old guy. So, you know, she was like, that could have been me. And I can say that I don't know. Like, it all started because she felt a way that I didn't have the emotional reaction to it that she wanted me to have, I guess you can say. And I remember, like, we had a really big argument because she was like, you don't care what happened to me. Like, I guess she was saying, like, I didn't cry. And I'm like, wait a minute. Like, why do you want me to? And I'm not going to say that I didn't. Of course, that's my mother. I love her to death. It was crazy. But at the same time, I was extremely happy and grateful the fact that she was okay. She was okay as in she was alive. I knew she wasn't okay emotionally and mentally. I knew that was going to be, you know, a process for her to get better because I knew she was going to match it afterwards. But I mean, like, she was alive. You know what I mean? So it became this thing where she was like, you don't care what happened to me. And I'm like, bro, I live in Jersey and I'm here in your house, like, helping you do things because you can't freaking walk. Like,
right. Yeah.
What do you mean I don't care? You have to look at the bigger picture, like that how I'm showing you that I care.
You know? Yeah, no, it has to be their way.
Yeah, I have to show the care in her way. Like, she wanted me to be like, you know, like my younger brother and be crying. And yeah, he feels differently because he's in a far away in a different state. And he couldn't be here and he's not here with you. So he has a different, you know what I'm saying? Like, he had a different reaction to it. But shit, your husband is not here crying with you. Like, why are you not getting on him? Why are you crying on me? Like, shit, it's okay because he's a man. Like, no, shit. You know, I'm grateful and I was happy the fact that you were alive, especially when someone that was shot with you is dead. Some mother right now is grieving her 18-year-old son.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's how I put it to her. And I'm like, yo, don't tell me that I don't care when I'm fucking here. You know?
Right, you're fine.
Right. But anyway, yeah, that's just, we'll have a whole different episode. I actually wanted to have like, and I think I expressed this to you, like I wanted to have like a panel. I wanted to make it like a panel where it'll be like visuals and we can all kind of just give our story. And I wanted to have like different people, like, you know, a man, a woman, a parent, because
different perspectives
of like what it was. And
I think that we should do it because I feel like I actually just had this conversation with my therapist and she was like, you know, like I've always said that what I learned from my parents is the kind of parent I didn't want to be. And I parent way differently than my mom ever did. And I just, you know, like, yeah, sometimes I have, like, my biggest fear is to fail as a mom, you know? So I do my best and I try my best and I talk to them the way that I wish somebody would have talked to me when I was little or when I was their age. I'm honest, and I just tell them shit exactly how it is. And my husband didn't agree with that. We had many arguments where he just felt like, you know, they shouldn't know about that or whatever. You know, like how little kids, you tell them, like, once they start like figuring out their bodies or whatever, they, you tell them, oh, like, that's your pee-pee or whatever, and like things like that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Mm. I never did that. I never did that. I always called their parts by what they were. And my husband would just be like, why are you doing that? And I was like, because that's what it is. So when my two little ones, they're 2 years apart. And when my son, like, he, I guess, like, once he noticed that, like, Gabby had something different, he asked me, why does her penis look different?
Yeah.
And I was like, because she doesn't have a penis. She has a vagina. And he was like, but why? And I'm like, because she's a little girl and you're a little boy. Because, mm-hmm. you know, they're not born knowing anything. And no, what they learn is...
age where they're curious.
Yeah, no, but they learned what we teach them. So it's like, me growing up, it was always, like, that was very taboo. It was very, like, no, like,
same.
You're not even allowed to talk like that or about things like that, like, don't even look at her, or, you know, like, it was just so bad.
No,
like,
same.
It was something that was, like, really bad. And I just feel like they just need to understand. If you explain to them, they will understand. And it won't be so, like, crazy and you know, whatever.
Yeah, same.
I don't
here.
Know. That's just me.
Yeah. Yeah, my parents were the same way. Talking about sex was like taboo, you know? The most my mom ever spoke to me about was like when I got my period for the first time. Other than that, like, she gave me like one conversation and that was it.
I never got
and, like,
one.
Don't
and my
get
mother
pregnant.
Swears that she did. Listen, my mother swears that she talked to me about sex. My mom never talked to me about sex.
No.
One time they said the word prostitute in a novela and she beat my ass for repeating it.
Meanwhile, so, you have no idea what it meant. It's just like, just don't
exactly,
say it.
Exactly. All I did was repeat it.
Yeah.
And she beat the shit out of me for that. So, and she never talked to me about sex. Everything that I learned about sex, I learned on my own. So with my kids, I didn't want that. So I started talking to like my two big ones. I started talking to them about sex like right away.
Mm-hmm.
I did tell my daughter, though, like, when she first got her period, I was like, now that you have your period, you can't, you know, you have to be very careful if you decide to have sex. Like, I never told them don't have sex, because I feel like when they say don't have sex, that's when they
you want it
going
more.
Through it. Mm-hmm. Right. So I never said don't have sex. I used to just, you know, like, my conversation with her was always, if you have sex, be safe. You know, like, and I
more
I
like an educational thing.
Yes, but I did try to scare her in the beginning. And I was like, now that you got your period, you know, if you have sex, you're going to get pregnant. So don't have sex unless you're ready to be a mom. And
you
she
gotta
just gave
do
me
it.
This look.
You got to do it like the gym teacher from Mean Girls. Don't have sex. Because if you have sex, you get chlamydia and die.
Yeah.
That's
oh my God.
that was how my mom's book about sex, like, just don't do it, just don't
yeah,
ask me why, like, just don't do it, trust me. I'm like,
it's crazy.
Okay, but yeah, it was the same thing with me. Listen, it was growing up, my parents found a problem if I had a friend of the opposite sex. Okay.
Oh,
like, it was this big thing where, like, oh, if I had like a guy friend or whatever, like, for the most part, for as long as I can remember, I always liked being with guys because I had an older brother, you know, most of my cousins were like, they were all guys for the most mm-hmm. part until my aunt finally had another girl, but I was surrounded by boys. So I had this tomboy shit to me. I was rough. I was aggressive like a boy. Like, my brother was always, we were always fighting, always beating each other up. So I always felt comfortable being more around guys, you know, the opposite sex. So It was mm-hmm. looked like no, because they're gonna want you and they're gonna want to have sex with you, and this, which all right, fine.
But you 30, see, but
that's
you
true,
see what,
but it's healthy no, but for you to create.
It's like
yeah, it, they make everything
they
so
created
bad.
That.
Yes,
yes, they do that. They make it bad.
Yes,
because you're not thinking about that. Chances are maybe they weren't even thinking about that.
They plant
but
that
now
seed.
They put that in your head, and it's like now you're thinking about it because it's like they said it.
Yeah, they plant that seed, and it's like, what the fuck, you know? And for the most part, like the like my eyes were covered with wool for most of my life living at home, because they try to keep me and shelter me from absolutely everything and never really told me like how the real life works. You really think that like life is a certain way, right? When you see it in Disney movies, or you think life is that way. And it's like, no, life is not like that. People are not really like that. It's a fucking yeah. cold world out there. You know what I mean? So,
yeah,
you know, I don't have kids, but I always knew, like you said, I knew the parent I didn't, like, I don't want to be, should I say. And I always say, like, if I'm blessed enough to ever be a mom, like, I just don't want to be like, as much as I love my mom, I don't want to be like my mom. And that's one of my biggest fears when it comes to having children, is being like, ends up being like my mom.
You know what's crazy? I feel like I don't know, I always had that, like, I don't even know if it's like a complejo when it came to that. I don't know how to say that in, how do you say that in English? Insecurity or something?
Yeah, yeah, insecurity.
So it's like when I got pregnant at 16, and from the minute that I knew that I was pregnant, like I knew, like I wanted that baby. Like abortion was never even like on the thing for me. And, you know, me being 16, everybody was just like, you're crazy, like you're so young or whatever. But I just, like, I knew that it was mine and that it was my turn to, like, have somebody to protect and to kind of, like, I don't know why I thought of it this way, but it was, like, my way to prove to the world that I was not going to be like my mom. Like, that's how, I wow. guess that's the way that I, yeah, isn't that fucking crazy? I'm a crazy bitch.
No, that's, I don't think that's crazy. That's not crazy.
So, yeah, and then, you know, and I ended up, I lost that baby. I miscarried and I almost died.
Wow.
Yeah.
You almost, almost died, like, literally? Like, you had complications?
Yes.
Or you just mean,
yes,
like, emotionally?
Yes. Yes. Oh, okay. No, I literally almost died. And it's, oh my, I wrote about this on my blog. It was such an experience because, all right, so I had this friend. Her name is Amanda. And Amanda told me a story one time about how, like, she got pregnant and she, like, punched herself in the stomach to lose the baby. And then she just sat in her bathtub and let, like, all the blood come out or whatever.
Oh, my God.
And me being so young and naive, I believed her. So when I, the way that I miscarried was kind of traumatic. So I was scheduled for my first ultrasound. And when I went, they told me that I was so excited. And they told me my baby didn't have a heartbeat. And I was devastated. They told me my baby, I was supposed to be 12 weeks along, but my baby was still the size of an 8-week-old fetus. So I was devastated.
Well, you had fetal demise?
I guess.
Oh, they call it missed abortion as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I never, you know, like, it was just dead inside of me. And they scheduled me. This happened in March. So I hate the month of March because all the bad things that ever happened to me happened in March. So this was March 11th. They scheduled me for, like, to clean it out or whatever for a DNC for March 25th, 2 weeks later. Isn't that insane?
Yeah, that is crazy.
And then, but then my body, like, but then I miscarried. And then this happened, like, I woke up one morning and I was, like, covered. It's going to get graphic. I'm sorry, people. But I was covered in, like, water and blood or whatever. And then I remember what Amanda had told me. So I fucking went and did it. And I sat in the tub and I was just letting all this blood come out. And I sat there for, like, 2 hours and I wouldn't stop fucking bleeding. And then I was like, okay, fuck this. Like, I'm just going to go back to bed or whatever. So then I got up and I was getting out of the tub and I passed out.
Wow.
And luckily my sister was home. She called 911. You know, they took me to good old Bronx Care. And I, when I got there, I was really weak. I couldn't open my eyes. I couldn't make a fist for them to draw blood. They couldn't find my veins to put an IV. Like, it was insane. And then they did an ultrasound and they saw that, like, my baby was still in there and it was, like, fine and whatever. But so, like, all that blood that I was losing was mine.
Oh, wow.
And that's why I was so weak and whatever. So if my sister hadn't been home and I would have passed out, and or if I would have stayed in the tub longer, just letting myself bleed out, I would have fucking died.
That's scary.
That is fucking scary.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, guys, this is why they call me Dory, because this is not what we were talking about, and this is where
it's
we ended
not,
up.
It's not, but welcome to the world of podcasting and the world of podcasting, and also podcasting with a person who has ADHD. So welcome, guys. But yeah. No, it always, and you know, it evolved into a great conversation, because these are like legit conversations that I do like to have because they're in depth. You know what I'm saying? And yeah, I, for the most part, I've always wanted the podcast to kind of just be versatile like that with conversation. Like, it can go from, you can get a little bit of toxic, you can be educated a bit, and you can also, like, you know, relate to a lot of the stuff. So yeah, it's a good thing, I guess. But as far as like the story you was telling, yeah, I mean, that didn't happen to me per se, but okay, so for the most, like, I'm gonna say for the most part, but I always knew that, like, I wanted to have children, right? It's crazy, but from like a young age, I was always very nurturing. I was always told that I was like super nurturing. I was such a caring child. I was always surrounded by older people, right? Like, I was with my grandparents a lot. I was always with their siblings. Like, they were, you know, cause they're all older. And, I was always like caring for them. Like, I was always doing things for them. Like, I was always, like massaging my grandmother's feet. I was always like putting lotion on her legs. Like, I just like to just be nurturing in that sense. Right. And, that's just something that, like, I'm still like that to this day, you know, like, I love just doing things like that. And I don't know. I guess like things didn't play out for me the way I wanted to, like, cause when I got in my first relationship long term, like, I did get pregnant like within the first year of us being together. And the same thing happened to me. Like, I wasn't planning to get pregnant, but I just, like, one day I thought I had the flu. And I was, like, so sick, and I remember I couldn't go to work, and I was in bed, and my ex used to work the overnight, so he came in the morning time, and I was just, like, in bed in the quilts, and he was like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, I think I have the flu or whatever. And he was like, yo, take a pregnancy test. I don't know why that was the first thing that came to his head, and I'm like, no, I'm not pregnant.
Maybe he was already thinking that it was a possibility.
Yeah, so I was just like, no, I'm not pregnant or whatever. He was like, I'm gonna give you money, go get a pregnancy test, whatever. So I'm like, all right, whatever. I don't remember. I think he went to get the pregnancy test for me. Excuse me. He went to go get the pregnancy test for me. He brought it back or whatever. And he ended up going to bed. And when I finally got out of bed, like, I took the test, bitch, shit was positive. I was like, no way. No. And I remember I remember being like so happy. Yo, it brings like tears to my eyes, because I remember just being so happy, Dory. Like, I don't know. I was just like, wow, like, I'm gonna be a mom, like, this crazy, whatever. So, my best friend, which is his sister, she, you know, we lived together. So I remember telling her, like, oh my God, I'm pregnant, whatever, whatever. And she was super happy, you know? So, yeah. I called my mom. I told my mom. My mom worked at a clinic at the time, and she scheduled me an appointment to go in and have an ultrasound done, find out exactly how far along I am. I did that a few days later. But then they called me in and they referred me to the hospital. Funny enough, the hospital that I currently work in, they referred me to go to the hospital because they were saying that there was no heartbeat. I remember the paperwork said no fetal heartbeat. Right? Yeah. So, you know, they did another ultrasound because I was like, no, it can't be. This has to be a mistake. Like, I was over here, you know, I'm 19 years old. And I'm like, no, maybe something is positioned somewhere where you can't find it or whatever, whatever. And they were like, listen, you know, we're going to do it one more time. But, you know, this is nothing new. We've seen this plenty of times. And, yeah, they did it again. And then they referred me to the hospital for me to have the DNC. And I had the DNC done. Yeah, like a few days. Everything was very quick process. I had it done. And then, you know. It was that same day. They actually put me to sleep. I had it done, and I was out of the hospital, like, later on that day after I had the procedure done. So, yeah, it was, and I was heartbroken, yo. I was
me too.
Heartbroken, like.
Me too, and everybody was looking at me like I was crazy because I was 16. But it's like, I had already pictured what my baby was going to look like. And then, you know, my boyfriend at the time, he was like, he went to this like bruja or whatever. And she like described, she said we were going to have a baby girl. And she described her exactly like how she was going to look. And she even told me when she would be born. So it's like when I lost this baby, I was like, what the fuck was that lady talking about? Like, that was all bullshit, blah, 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 whatever. So I ended up getting pregnant right away. And even though it wasn't on purpose, I think subconsciously it was on purpose. But I ended up getting pregnant right away. And I had Jasmine, I had my daughter. And everything that the lady had said about that first baby was true in Jasmine.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Except for, like, the date of birth or whatever. Mm-hmm. But everything else, igualita, like, she just described her, like, entirely. And here she is. Now she's 19 and crazy.
Shout out to her.
I know.
Shout out to Jazz. That's my boo. I love Jazz. She's me. She's a younger, she's 19-year-old me. She feisty, she fiery, she's like, she's a main character. That was 19-year-old me. Bitch is all about me.
She says it all the time. She said, I'm the main character in the story. Yes. All the time, every time.
Yo, but that's me. I swear I feel like that. I'm like, I'm the fucking main character. Like, bitch, what? Oh, man. That's why I love her so much. She definitely does remind me of me, like, when I was that age. But yeah, it started off, the episode just started off like so toxic, and it just got like so, it evolved into something else. But, you know, I do always appreciate the transparency. And I'm going to say were because I want you to like help me with it. We're definitely going to put together like an entire episode.
A parenting thing?
Yeah. Just. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Really and. Sick. Now, you know, I recently turned 38 years old, and I feel like at this point, I don't know if it's going to happen for me. Like, I said in a previous episode that I would be disappointed if motherhood was something that I've never experienced. And I know a lot of mothers that are like, girl, it's a lot, and it's not about you anymore, and this and that, and kids take up your time. And yo, I know all of those things, you know?
Yeah,
but
you know what's crazy? I feel like, yeah, like all of that is true. It's very much. You spent a lot of time with us. Like, you see how my kids are. And
I spent a lot of time with a lot of my homegirls that have kids. And I've.
Yeah, like you see how it is. But at the same time, it's like, there are little things that are just like irreplaceable. Like the other day, my son was laying in bed with me and we were watching South Park, and like that was our bonding moment. And I looked at him and I was like, yo, you are a carbon copy of me, and I love it. And then one day, whenever I'm sad, my little 8-year-old, she'll come and she'll give me kisses and she gives me hugs. And, you know, those are the things that make it worth it. Like, you struggle, but then at the end of the day, even Jazz, like, Jazz has put me through the ringer. But I freaking love that kid. Like, I don't know what my life would be without her.
Mm.
So, it matters.
Yeah,
it matters.
Of course. And I know all of those things. I know all my freedom and I won't be able to pick up and go. I understand all of those things, but it's still something that I would be disappointed if I didn't experience. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think because after that experience of my miscarriage, the heartbreak that I felt, I didn't want to experience it again. So, you know, getting pregnant, even like with my exes, was something that I kind of low-key feared, because I'm mm-hmm. like, oh my God, like, what if it happens again? That's my overthinking brain. Like, what if it happens again? Oh my God, like, maybe this is not meant for me. You start overthinking it so, and throughout the years of my 30s, like, that's something that I've thought about. I'm like, and then it was all about the man and the fear of like picking the wrong man and that man not being ready. But then it's like, yo, are you ever ready? Are you even ever ready?
No, nobody is ever ready.
Right.
Even people that think that they are, they're never ready, because it's like, it's such a major change. But you thinking way too much, girl.
I know.
I think too little, you think too much.
Yes,
because
I know.
Because my first reaction was, fuck it, let me get pregnant again. Let me replace my baby. And then I just kept having babies after.
No, I do. Because I don't know. I don't know what it is. I can't even put it into words. I can't explain it because the thoughts are in my head, but I'm just like, it's just so many things. I feel like everything needs to be perfect. And it's like, yo, it's nothing is perfect. Nothing is ever going to be perfect.
Right. I was just going to say,
you make it work because... Those are the cards that are dealt, you know?
Exactly.
So
it's your life now.
Yeah.
You make the best of it. I feel like everything you do in life, you have to kind of see it that way. You have to just like make the best of everything that comes your way, even the negative things. Because for one reason or another, like, you were meant to go through that. And when you get over like the sadness and stuff, and once like the depression goes away, then you, like, it's literally like the phoenix. Like, you reemerge fucking glorious and victorious and like a survivor. And it's a, you know, whatever was meant to break you didn't break you.
Yeah.
I don't know. New outlook.
I think,
on life for, you know, David Pass.
I actually think that was like a great ending to the episode. Like, that was like Jerry Springer's final thought.
Yeah, no, for real though.
Dory's final thought.
Hey.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see what life is, you know, brings the next, like, if it doesn't happen by 40, then it's just, I'm not gonna put my body through that, because you're high risk. And I know that plenty of women have gotten pregnant after 40, but at that point, I'm going to be a grandma. So, let's see.
You know, I can't wait to be a grandma.
Oh, gosh. I love, and I say this all the time, I love my mom, but I fucking love my grandmother. Like, yo, I would not have wanted any other grandmother. And my fucking Scorpio grandmother is the bomb, yo. My childhood, like, with so much darkness that my childhood had, she was the fucking light in my life, yo, my grandparents. Like, how I said earlier, my parents tried to shelter me from the world and keep this wool over my eyes. My grandmother would take that wool off and be like, no, bitch, this is really what life is. Like, mm-hmm. She was always so honest. She was
right. And you learn to appreciate that.
Yeah. My grandparents were honest. They were loving. I got the love side. I was raised on survival, but I got my love from my grandparents. You know, they showed me love. They care. They fucking respected what I thought, my thoughts, my feelings. They were just a bomb. Rest in peace to my grandpa. But my grandmother, my grandparents, I fucking love them to death, y'all. That's my grandmother is my fucking heart. Like, seriously.
Aww.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to close it off like that.
All right.
Dory, thank you so much for coming again on Ladies Pitch. I know it's not going to be your last time. Definitely, you'll be back. You'll be back soon with some more shit when the book is finished, as the blog evolves, all that good shit. You're going to come back and we're going to talk about it. Deal?
Yes.
So tell everyone where they can find you. What's Your Silent Confessions Instagram page?
It's Dory_Silent Confessions. And we actually, I say I'm a corporation, but I have a business number now. So you guys can text me if you want to, if you have questions, or if you just want to give me feedback, because I write a lot of crazy shit.
Yeah, I'm going to make sure to put all the information, put your phone number, put the link to the blog and all that good shit in the show details. So if anyone's interested, I know that Dory will keep anyone anonymous that wants to remain anonymous. So, yeah, absolutely. You know, it's a safe space, guys. I guess you know this by now.
It really is. It really is.
Yeah, yeah. And no topic is off limits, clearly. Telling by this episode. Absolutely. So make sure you guys follow her. Read the blog. It's dope as fuck. Very interesting. Very informative. And also, don't forget to subscribe to Ladies Pitch on all streaming platforms. You can find Ladies Pitch on Instagram at Ladies Pitch and on Twitter, Pitch718. So where you can find a podcast, you will find the Ladies Pitch podcast there. Ladies, don't forget, you deserve to be happy and fucked disrespectfully. I'm going to make sure I reiterate that every motherfucking week. So this is your favorite mommy. Your favorite forgetful little fish Dory over there. And we catch you guys on the next one. Peace.
Bye.